Nachiomi for the Orthodox Union, Sefer Shoftim, the Book of Judges, Perek Yud Beis, Chapter 12, Rabbi Binny Marilis. Chapter 12 gives us the end of the life of Yiftach, with one very, very unfortunate episode to start. Then we meet up with a few Shoftim, who appear very quickly and pass very quickly, in the sense that we only get a few verses about them in a very short chapter, which sets the stage for the arrival of Shimshon, who will be the last in this Sefer, the last of the Shoftim in this Sefer listed, leading up to the two very unfortunate events at the end of the book. In essence, in our chapter, we meet four different Shoftim who Sachakol together reign over the Jewish people for a good number of years. But we begin with another very unfortunate event. In the aftermath of the war, Yiftach is victorious. He is initially raised up to a very exalted status as the leader of the Jewish people, certainly the leader in his location. And by virtue of his neder and the fulfillment of his vow, as it related to his daughter, perhaps some of his star had fallen, and he was not as exalted any longer in the eyes of the many. And at the same time, in the manner in which he executed his war, so it seems that he ticked off and upset a particular tribe, the tribe of Ephraim, who was supposed to be his family, his kinsman, his immediate brother. It's not immediately clear to Ephraim as to why that happens, as to why it was that way. Yiftach enlightens them, but he doesn't enlighten them in a way that is meaningful enough or strong enough or smooth enough, per se, to calm their fears. As we'll see the story unfold, it will remind us of an event that took place not too long ago in the text, but perhaps a good number of years ago in actual history, of Gideon, and a similar event as it relates to Ephraim, and to see the difference between how Gideon handled it and the way Yiftach handles it, and the results therewith based on their reactions. Perek Yud Beis. Vayitzaik ish Ephraim, vayavur tzafona. The people of Ephraim, the man of Ephraim, literally, gathered together, and they crossed north. Where exactly? Maybe, perhaps they didn't know exactly where they were going, but they went north, and it seems that they're looking for Yiftach. Vayomru li Yiftach, and they say to Yiftach, Madua avarta li lachim bivnei Amon. Why did you go to war, to cross and go to war against Ammon? V'lanu lo karasa lalechasimach beisicha. Sorry, lama. V'lanu lo karasa lalechasimach. Why did you not call us to go with you? Why didn't you call upon us to go with you? Remember that Ephraim is very proud of the notion that they're a powerful group. They're a very powerful, strong tribe, militarily and physically. And to have a reputation in the Jewish people as a warring group that can lead and that can be part of an army that can be victorious, as they have shown in other battles. So here, in essence, they're offended for not having been asked to join the theater of battle in the war versus Ammon. Keep in mind the manner in which the war with Ammon is fought, the manner in which Yiftach falls upon them in surprise and comes from the rear side. He's crossing regions, and perhaps it was obvious to Ephraim that he was going, and that he was going without them. And they want to know why. The Das Sofrim takes a very, sort of, very positive approach to it, that mitzad their desire to help the Jewish people, mitzad their desire to simply fulfill their destiny, they want to understand why they weren't called. They want to be called. It's not out of arrogance, it's out of a want to be connected, a want to be affiliated, a want to be involved in larger Jewish people activity. So why aren't they called? And then they threaten him. Beischa nisrof alecha ba'esh. We'll burn down your house with you in it. It's probably not the best way to speak to the leader of the people, the victor in war, the savior of the Jewish people, the Shofet Ha'am. And yet it is that they threaten him and his household with conflagration, with burning. Yiftach responds. In reading Yiftach's response, keep in mind Gideon's response years earlier. They'd come to Gideon with the same taina, with the same claim. Why didn't you call us? Gideon's response was very savvy and very politically smooth. And he mollifies them and he calms them and he soothes their ego and basically says, you did more than me. And he doesn't directly answer their question. He sort of skirts it by offering praise instead. And it goes away. It simply goes away. And here now, years later, another leader from the tribe of Manasseh is there. And again, he's sort of scorning the people of Ephraim. And again, they want to know why. And here, Yiftach really has a choice as to how to answer and what to say. Let's see what Yiftach says. Vayomu Yiftach aleihem. Yiftach responds. Ishriv ha'isi ani ve'ami uvne amon me'od. I fought and I battled me and my army with the people of Ammon a lot. There was a lot of fighting, a great amount of strife, a great amount of war. Ve'ezak eschem, v'lo hoshatem osim miyadam. And I called upon you and I summoned you and you didn't come. You didn't save us. You didn't save me from them. The Mitzudas David in his commentary here parenthetically makes the comment that when he's talking about the idea of the calling out to them to help him, that was when he was battling in Eretz Tov. Remember, we mentioned in the last chapter that after he runs away and he corrals a group of boorish vagabonds, essentially, to be his people, to be his army, up there, it seems that he did battle, that he gained some reputation up there in fighting. And the Metudas David understands that what he's saying here is that in his own personal battles that he fought at the outset, nobody helped him. Nobody listened. You didn't come in battle. Amongst the other commentaries, it simply sounds as if he did in fact call them to the war against Ammon, and they didn't come. Now, we don't hear that call. So it's a difficult approach. Although perhaps it's in fact the case, he says, "I called you. You didn't know. You didn't save me." He continues two. Ve'ereh in verse 3. Ve'ereh ki ein chamoshia. And I saw that you're not helping. So va'asima nafshi bechapi. So put my life in my own hands. Ve'ebra el bnei Ammon. And I went across, and I crossed onto and against the people of Ammon. Vayitneim Adonai biyadi. And God gave them over to me. Mitzudas David explains. Vayitneim Hashem biyadi. God gave them over to my hand. Ratzelomar. Hoyil v'Hashem nesanam biyadi. Since it is that God gave them over to me. Lami imkein tilachamuk bihayom. What are you coming here to fight with me? What are you arguing with me? As the text continues, and then we'll finish out the Mitzudas David. Lama alisim ilahayom hazeli lachem bi. What are you coming here today to fight with me? God gave them to me. God gave them into my hands. We were victorious. What are you fighting with me? That's the pashtos. That's the simple understanding. That's so. The Mitzudas David says as follows. Why you want to fight with me today? Kim hayisi minutzach. If I had been defeated, if victory was not mine in this case, hayahadin imachem bitzadma, then the judgment would be with you. You would be right. Ki oz yachaltim lomar, because then you could speak up. Ilu karasa lanu bozeh hapam, אחר שעמידוך הראש בגלעד, היינו הולכים גם אנו ברוב עם, והיינו מנצחים. You could say to me, well, had you called us, you know, sort of I told you so, had you called us Mr. Menashe, Mr. Yiftach, and we could have come with you in a large number, and we could have helped you, we would have won. Aval ata, but now, Amaza Tisra Amu, what are you doing? What are you causing strife here? What are you coming and threatening me for here? I was victorious. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them to me. So first of all, he says, you didn't help me. You never helped me. Secondly, he says, and then I had to do it on my own. And third, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it for me. So, irrespective of the first two pieces, we didn't need you. You weren't essential to a victory. So it's not the answer, perhaps, that would have stemmed the tide here and controlled the situation. That isn't to say that he isn't right, although it may not have been the right answer, per se. V'yikpots Yiftach es kol anshe Gilad v'ilachim es Ephraim. So then Yiftach gathers all of his people together and he battles with Ephraim. They go to war. Civil war. Another civil war. Not the first. Not the last. But another civil war between the tribes. Vayaku anche Gilad es Ephraim. The people of the Gilad, this is the people of Yiftach, subdue and beat down. And they strike a very significant blow against the people of Ephraim. Ki Amru. Because they would say, Plite Ephraim Atem. You're the lowly, the bottom of Ephraim. Gilad besoch Ephraim besoch Menashe. Gilad is within Ephraim, is within Menashe. The way many of the commentaries understand it, the way we just simply explained it now, was that was a statement that was being made by the people of Gilad, the people of Yiftach. It's a very prideful boast and mocking of the Ephraim, people of Ephraim who are now being subdued and beaten by them. Who are you? You're nothing. We can kill you. We can off you from the tribe. You're the lowliest of the low in Ephraim. Other commentaries offer perhaps the reverse. That why are the Anshe Gilad fighting with them and killing them? Because if you read it as follows, Ki Amru Plite Ephraim, if you read it as follows, that the Plite Ephraim, these people from Ephraim, this group from Ephraim had said, Atem Gilad Besoch Ephraim Besoch Menashe, you the people of Gilad, you belong here, you belong there, you belong everywhere, you don't belong anywhere. You're your own thing, you're individuals, you're separate, and they were making fun of them. And this is probably something that they had heard, according to, I believe, the Das Sofrim, that they had heard for many, many years, and it was playing on their minds, and an opportunity arose to attack. And there's an opportunity to put their foot against the neck, to literally give it to the people of Ephraim for what had been given to them for so many years. Different approaches, but ultimately the same unfortunate result. Vayilkod Gilad es ma'abros hayardin le'Ephraim, in verse 5, the people of Gilad seized the Jordan River crossings that would lead into Ephraim, so that now if Ephraim wanted to cross and they needed a way to get back to their land, they had a problem. Vayaki Yamru Plite Ephraim Evora. They would ask for safe passage to go across. Vayomru Lo Anche Gilad Ephrasi Ephrasi Ata. Vayomru Lo. They would ask him, are you from Ephraim? And they would sort of set up border crossings, checkpoints almost. Are you from Ephraim? They would ask the people. And they would say, no, we're not Ephraim. So then they would test them. Vayomru lo, they would say to them, Emarna Shiboles. Say the word Shiboles. Vayomer Siboles. And he would answer, Siboles. They would test them with words that they couldn't pronounce. It appears that the people of Ephraim had a certain manner of speech that was unique to them, that any shin would be pronounced as a samach, or a sin. and that by virtue of saying those types of words, they would be outed, that they would be obvious to the world and the public who they were. And in this way, the people of Menashe could discriminate and segregate and pull these people out and kill them and hurt them when it was necessary. So here, even in a lie, where the people of Ephraim would say, no, we're not of Ephraim, there was a way to induce the truth from them. So they would say, Sibolas. The way the Radak explains is that they really would test them with any sort of word that had that sort of a problem, and this was the one that the text chose to describe. They would not be able to enunciate and to speak properly the words. Vayochazu also, they would then grab the person. Vayishchatuhu amabros hayarden, and they would then slaughter them on the border crossings, the river crossings, the Jordan River crossings there. Vayipo be'esahi me'afrayim arba'im ushnayim alef. 42,000 people die in this civil war between brother tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. 42,000. Could it have been avoided? Perhaps it could have been avoided. Are we to lay sole blame at the feet of Yiftach? I'm not sure that we can do that either. But nonetheless, perhaps it is resulting of his response. But probably deeper is this is a result of where the Jewish people are and the state of affairs in the Jewish people, in the community at large, going forward. They're not united. They're not connected. They're not a singular people. But they're tribes of a larger construct. They really don't seem to have a relationship. They don't seem to be connected for the larger mission or the larger purpose. Yiftach, Sacha Kol, in the end of the day, adding all told, 6 years, he's a shofet. Yiftach passes away, and he's buried in the cities of Gilad. And now we get a quick hit from a few different shoftim. The next shofet after Yiftach is a gentleman by the name of Ivtzan from Beit Lechem. Chachamim tell us that Ivtzan is none other than the famous Boaz of Rut fame, the story of Megillas Rus, that according to our understandings, that the way that text begins, so it was in the day the judges were judging, that the story of Ruth takes place during this time frame, during this period. Exactly when is not clear, but they come to the conclusion that Ivtzan is in fact Boaz. Vehilo shloshim banim shloshim banos. He has 30 sons and 30 daughters. Shloshim banim u'shloshim banos shilach hachutza u'shloshim banos hevi levanav min hachutz. And what he did was he married off all of his children. He sent his sons out to marry out to the greater distances. What that means is simply that he had his children marry people outside of the tribe. U'shloshim banos hevi levanav min hachutz, and for his daughters he brought men from out of the tribe to marry his family. We each put Es Yisrael Sheva Shanim, and he was a shofet for 7 years. Vayamas Ivtzan v'yikaver beBeis Lachem. Ivtzan passes, and he's buried in Beis Lachem. We each put Acharav Es Yisrael Elon HaZvuloni. After Ivtzan is a gentleman by the name of Elon. We each put Es Yisrael Eser Shanim, and he judges for 10 years. No other details are mentioned about Elon. Vayamas Elon haZvuloni. Zvuloni passes away. Vayikavir ba'Ayalon be'eretz Zvulun. And he's buried in a place called Ayalon, which is in Zvulun. Zvulun, remember, is to the north. And the last one listed here, Vayishpod Acharav Es Yisrael Avdon ben Hilel ha'Pir Asoni. After Ivtzan and after Elon is Avdon. Vahilo arba'im banim u'shloshim b'nei banim rochvim al shivim ayarim. And he has 40 sons and 30 grandchildren, grandsons, who were riding on sachakol 70 horses, 70 animals. Vayishvot es Yisrael shmona shanim. And he was a shofet for 8 years. Vayamas Avdon ben Hila hapirasoni. Avdon passes away. Vayikavir b'fir ason be'eretz Ephraim pahar ha'amaliki. And he's buried in a place called, in the place Pirason, which is in the land of Ephraim, in an area that's known as the Har HaAmaliki, the mountain of Amalek. Why it's called that, so many of the commentators say that they had been there and that they had left their mark there, and it became known afterwards on that name. The judges themselves perhaps don't offer any specific uniqueness in the course of their years of judging. One must assume that the Jewish people were in good states. So you have here what you have is 7 years, and then 10 years, and then 8 years. This is 25 years, plus the years of Yiftach, which were a little bit more difficult. But the 25 years of these three Shoftim seem to have been fairly quiet. The listing of the children, perhaps that's a listing for the sake of kavod and honor to these individuals and to these men, for the sake of Ivtsan, that he married off all of his children, as some of the commentaries note. I mean, he was zochet to see them all married off. For the sake of Avdon later on, that he has all of these people who were mechubadim, that they're honorable people and they're worthy of distinction. They carried themselves a certain way. And so that's a cover for him as well. It's just a side point, perhaps, and this would require further understanding. We had a story similar to this just prior to Yiftach, and perhaps they sort of set up bookends to this little section of the text, although the question would be then, what's the point of that? What is that teaching us? And why would we need to bookend the story of Yiftach with these two stories about men who had their children ride on certain types of animals and what that means? It's a subject of a larger discussion. It sets us up now for our story of Shimshon, and that will begin tomorrow with Perek Yud Gimel.